Would you introduce yourselves from stage right?
Oh, I don't know.
Stage right. Let's see. Would that be your right? Okay, so that means left. Okay. Or the stage right on the in like on
we
our stage.
You failed the test.
Yeah, you did. How could you be in a friggin' rock band or whatever the hell it is? Introduce yourselves, will ya?
Okay, well, my name is Angelo Moore.
Amazing. And you are?
Yeah, I'm Norwood Fisher, bass player of the band Fishbone.
So we're here for an auspicious occasion, although this is going to run a little later.
So wait, should I do it again?
No. No, he covered for you. Oh. Isn't that what bandmates
are about? Well, I didn't say what I played, man.
What the hell do you
play? I play saxophone and I play theremin and I am the front man.
Okay, you see, you've now redeemed yourself.
Yeah.
You're all ready. So I thought it would be really, really fun to do this interview a different way. I don't really want, he lived in Woodland Hills and he lived here and they, you know, and they were radical and they were the first ones
to take
rock and ska and mix them up and blah, yeah. blah, blah.
Right.
Right. That's what bios are for. There's enough pages on this band
on the internet
for the next 50 gazillion years. So nobody needs me to do, I'm bored with that.
Right.
You know, nobody needs that.
Right, that's right.
But what's really kind of fun is that it's all right here on the description of the movie.
Right.
So I'm handing this to him, and he is going to read the description of the movie, and then we're going to use that description as our special model for what we're going to do.
Fishbone says bassist and Primus head honcho Les Claypool should have been the band that went way beyond the rest of us. Instead, this LA-based seminal punk ska metal band started by inner-city black kids caught in a collision of cultures when bust into the white bread suburban struggled with racial bias among fans and the music industry as well as personal demons.
Damn.
Oh, sorry.
My God.
Personal demons, we needed it right there, right?
Yeah.
Along the way, this innovative group known for its high-octane sound and incendiary frontman Angelo Moore created Reagan-era rock anthems like Party at Ground Zero and influenced such copycat bands as the Red Hot Chili Peppers and No Doubt. Fishbone also faced trials and tribulations in 1993. Bassist Norwood Fisher even stood trial in Marin County for kidnapping bandmate Kendall Jones in a botched intervention. Directors Lev Anderson and Chris Metzler captured the Mohawks and the Mosh Pits, the magic and the madness through the interviews, rare concert footage, and animation.
It's a quadruple M factor.
Lawrence Fishburne narrates.
All right. So now, here we are sitting across from each other, and I don't know whether to be scared of the incendiary front man.
Yeah.
That, you know,
yeah.
You,
the incendiary front man.
You need a t-shirt to go on stage with that
incendiary.
Says incendiary front man.
Incendiary front man.
Right, and you're a kidnapper. So you see... So I'm sitting in the studio here with an incendiary frontman and a kidnapper, and I'm really kind of, you know, of all the danger that there is in this studio, I'm really a little worried for all of our lives.
Incendiary.
He's looking it up. Look at this. He's pulling out the computer to see how incendiary he is.
How incendiary I am.
But all kidding aside, you know, one of the things that really is interesting about this industry, and everybody in this room is a little over 12 years old, maybe 13,
Exactly. I just put the Tonka toys away.
Yeah, you and me, well, I have a 9-year-old daughter, so I understand. But it's one too. There you go. But it's one of those things, it's one of those things where...
Hold on.
Here we go.
Incendiary, designed... to cause fires, tending to stir up conflict. Wow. A person who starts fires in the military context, a person that, that's a good one.
So, but what is... What
fire the, starter and a kidnapper.
There
oh,
you,
yeah.
Fire starter and a kidnapper. One of the things that always seems to make, you know, I mean, back in the days when I grew up and there was a New York Post, right? And they always had those big, giant headlines, you know, headless body found in topless bar, right? You know, there were always these, yeah. Right? You know, it's always about Pulp Fiction, right? It's always about that. But one of all of these years, what really is interesting is that here's an intro to a documentary about you. And here's one of your compatriots, you know, from Primus, Les, and his opinion is, well, this is the band that they could have been, right? Okay, but here's the thing. I don't really know, unless I'm mistaken, that the Red Hot Chili Peppers, or No Doubt, has a film documentary playing at a major film festival or multiple major film festivals about the band. Well, you're not the band that could have been. You're the band that's been and is.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, you can always be here. You always look at it like that. Exactly.
I mean, how
you know, I tell you, man, I've met some people that'll just straight come up to me and said, "How does it feel to look at all these other bands that you started out with just surpass you, and you're just still here?"
But that's what I'm saying. What is?
How does it feel to be like that? You know, aren't you mad that you're not a millionaire by now? You know, or like, for instance, the guy last night, not last night, but the night before last night at this poetry reading I was doing at the Boom Boom Room. This dude came in and he was like, "I love Fishbone. I love you. And yeah, I like the Fishbone music. I've been listening to you guys ever since way back when. I remember seeing you in Dallas, Texas, or maybe it was Houston, and all of this stuff. And, you know, what can I get? What can I buy?" So I showed him some of my Dr. Mad Vibe stuff, my comic books and CDs. He says, "I want you to sign this. I want you to sign it for me. I want you to make a special autograph on it." I'm like, "Okay, where's the money?" So we went back and forth about, "Give me the money and I'll sign it." And he says, "Well, I want you to sign it and then I'll give you the money." These are one of the kind of people that come up to you and go, "Wow, it's too bad you guys just haven't made it. That's so unfortunate. Man, I remember back in 1990-something when I saw Fishbone, and you guys are the reason why this and that and the other, and it's too bad. And, well, I love you, and, well, it's too bad."
If I would have got into this game to buy a mansion and a yacht and be Elmer J. Fudd, you know, then maybe I would be disappointed. But I actually got in the game to play music and to do things that I love and to actually, you know, I got more out of the bargain than I actually got in it for. I can honestly say, like, I remember the first day that we got paid to play a show, and I'm like, "Whoa, $25. Wow, you actually get paid for doing this, right?" Like, well, I had the time of my life. It's like, you know, and I'm still like, wow, you know, I'm living a dream. Captain Beefheart mad at Frank Zappa because he made all, like, more money, even though Frank Zappa didn't make, you know, he wasn't. But you know what I mean? It's like, come on, dude. It's like, you do what you do. If you enjoy it, you'd be thankful you had a good time along your way.
That's right.
Unless you actually set out to be Elmer J. Fudd with a mansion and a yacht, then you can be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all your perception. Your perception.
Well, yeah.
We have a very dedicated fan base that is actually waiting for our next material to drop.
Well, that's the other thing.
Rather than like, you know, my homegirl Annabella from Bow Wow Wow is going to be riding on I Want Candy, and that's about all that there'll be.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
You know what I mean? But, you know, and we were very fortunate enough to engage with Curtis Mayfield and doing a song for the movie I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
Yes.
And
yes.
The things that he said he actually liked the way that we interpreted his song.
Well, because I think we've covered that one. I think we know that you're not the band that almost made it. So you guys, you had to break out of the ghetto and you had to and then you combine these two genres and next thing you know,
oh, God,
you have blah blah blah.
I hear that so much, I'm so desensitized to it now, man.
No, you won't. Sorry. We did that as a joke here. It's all over.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, I'm blowing that sucker up. Boom, there's the radio, right? And on the radio back then in heavy rotation is Nirvana. And but the thing about K-Rock is to this day, a day does not go by where Party at Ground Zero is not played, I would say, once every 6 hours or 7 hours.
Yeah.
It is in heavy, permanent, till the end that they die rotation. And you never went into this with your, quote, diverse backgrounds, one coming from here.
Yeah, well, not intentionally with those things in mind to add those different things, man. It just came from the music that we listened to. Yeah.
And we didn't know that that's what it was.
We didn't know. We were just doing it because we were doing what we were feeling.
It felt natural.
Yeah, but I mean, you started this thing when you were really, really young.
Exactly.
Really, really, really young. So at what point do you think that, or did you ever look at each other and go, wait a minute, were you able ever to, and are you still able to listen to it and realize what the influence has been?
Well, yeah. Now, very much in this amount of hindsight, yes, it is actually, we can look back and kind of see, but it took a while, you know? It took like a lot of people telling us over and over again to really, for me particularly, to actually get first what we were doing, you know? We were way off into it, really deep making records before I actually got it. And then really to understand the impact that the band had on people, like, you know, it's like having like the guys in Anthrax come up to us and go like, well, I don't know if you know who our band is, but we're Anthrax and we all really love you guys' music, man. And it's like, you know what, that's somebody that sounds nothing like us coming up and saying like, you know, you're impacting what we do. It was amazing.
Yeah. Now, you know, and it really, when we were making all of that music, man, I mean, as far as I could see, it wasn't really important to anybody what kind of style we were doing, because we were just doing it.
We were having fun.
What we heard, yeah.
But isn't all the great stuff that way that you can't turn around? I mean, is Otis Redding a soul artist, or is Otis Redding a rock and roll artist, or is Otis Redding a roots artist, or it's so easy to...
Way later down the line, they probably put that label on him as a soul artist or whatever. But while he was putting it down, because he liked it, and that's the kind of music that he wanted to do to express himself.
You know what's fun is running into Little Richard in the streets or in an airport. And you just go, thanks for being Little Richard. You know,
because he was just so completely out there from moment one.
Yeah, from the gate.
And it's like, actually, whatever he was doing makes it possible for all of us, no matter who you are, what you're doing musically. He laid on the barbed wire for everybody else to just run over and be. So, you know, actually, it all goes back to Little Richard, Chuck Berry, and Bo Diddley. You know, and at the end of the day, if you could draw a straight line back to that, it's like, you know, that's the Big Bang.
And is that because
everything is related?
And I'm going to get controversial here. Is that because those guys were men of color that were playing rock and roll?
They were making music, and that was it. That was all.
When you said, is it because they were men of color? And I thought to myself, well, where is he coming from with that?
Good. This is what I want.
You know where I'm coming from with that.
Because I'm coming from what everybody, as he's saying that in their head, in this audience, is thinking. Right? Because they're trying to analyze it and trying to get the formula down.
Yeah. And plus, man, what they with did. All the separatism and racism in America, of course you're going to have people start to say stuff like that because it's just enrooted in America.
That's my point.
Yes,
exactly.
But at the end of the day, those guys, they were just making music, and it happened to be branded rock and roll, and it, you know.
But up until then, as you well know, and even during that era, you know, though Little Richard's stuff, we'll get into like musical history. You know as well as I know that his music wasn't originally played on the radio, that Pat Boone and all these other guys did the version of it back then that people were, and it wasn't until way down the line that suddenly everybody said, oh, we can play the originals, it's safe now.
You know, my ultimate point is that, like, it all goes back to the same thing. Those guys in Jamaica, you know, that were listening to the jazz, and they were influenced by those guys, and they were influenced by Motown, and everything begats the next thing. And it, you know, most our whole thing growing up is like we had diverse record collections, and we figured that everybody had diverse record collections, because even Kendall's mom had, like, she liked her little Rolling Stones. Mm-hmm. She liked her little Van Halen, and she had those records.
My dad liked Led Zeppelin. My dad liked Led Zeppelin and Billy Joel and Duke Ellington. James Brown and all that.
You know, there are some people that maybe were, like, segregated musically. But our thought was, like, you know, most people, like, you know, they listen, maybe have something that they listen to more than others. But most people have, like, you know, like a little extra flavor here and there, just like with your food.
Okay.
So you know, these lunatics come to you and they say, we want to make a documentary about you. And you say, well, you know, we're the band that almost made it. Why do you want to do a documentary about us?
Actually, we didn't say that.
Oh, you didn't? You're kidding. Gosh.
No.
I thought that's what you would have said.
No, we said,
You know what I said? This is what I would tell you exactly. Because John Phil, our manager, called and was asking, and my first reaction was, well, I don't know if I want to do a documentary about the band right now, because I think we're still writing the story.
Who said that?
I said that.
Oh.
That was my reaction.
Yeah, you're thinking,
we're still writing the story.
We are still writing the story.
So you think, uh-oh, if you do the documentary, you're dead now.
It's over. That was my first reaction.
Here, I think the film comes out, and next thing you know, plane crash. It's over.
Right. Well, you know what, man? I thought to myself, you might as well do it anyway. What do we have to lose? You look at everybody else out there on TV with their documentaries and their movies.
Reality television,
Reality, which ain't reality anyway. It's just like some scripted shit. I thought to myself, if we're going to be seen, if people are going to know about us, we might as well let them film us, let them do it. And when I really became a... And plus, man, people film us all the time. So, you know, with good hope, I would think that they would take it to the point to where they would make it into something. And a lot of people have filmed this and have had the camera running, but it wasn't no follow-up. They just got a lot of good fishbone footage. But these guys, Chris and Lev, they got footage and they actually did something and they actually put it together to where it's actually in the movie theaters now. And it's got animation and everything. And so it's really, you know, it's really good. So I'm just like, hey, I said to myself, I'm just going to let go. I'm going to let them film us. They followed us around America and Europe.
So how much? This is one of those. I'm going to ask the one classic question because it is relevant to me for people who are eventually going to see the movie. How much did they come to you and say, this is the story we want to tell?
Well, you know what they did was they showed us, they gave us copies of the Plagues and Pleasures, the Salt and Sea. And they did such a good job with it. And so I was like, yeah, okay, they're real. We can hand over our story to these guys and they'll pull it through.
And at what point did they show it to you to get input? Because I could see them coming up, you know, I could see this band being in either we like it, do your thing, or... we're involved.
We were more like do your thing.
Do your thing, and I was involved. I was involved from the aspect of, you know, just go ahead and film me, film everybody. You know,
involved from allowing them.
Allowing them to come in.
That's great.
Last December or January, they actually were like, okay, we want you guys to come and see a cut of it, and honestly. It was a very, very dark cut. It was much darker than what you see. And I went, okay, go ahead.
You mean darker mood wise?
Yeah, oh, yeah. It was right. just more depressing. And right. I was like, and my response was, okay, cool, wrap it up. You know, I didn't care. I was like, it looked like what, you know,
it's
looked
what
like,
it is.
Yeah, it's just what it is. And I didn't sit around and watch all of the footage that they got, and you know what, all the interviews that I did were not fresh in my mind, so I didn't know what else there was lying on the cutting room floor. So I was just like, go. It took our manager to call and go like, hey, man, dude, it's not that bad over here, man. You got to like, you yeah. know, we don't want you to make a Hallmark card piece, but.
You never had to put it back together to make the movie because it's together.
Yeah, right. It's together and it never really broke up.
And never went away. So yeah. that's kind of an interesting stretch right in and of itself, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and you know, man, I tell you, dude, when this is the only thing you've been doing anyway, right? And, you know, you've gone from hard left to hard right and everything in between. And you're just thankful for what you got. Film it. What have we got to lose? The world needs to see it. We're considered an underground band. You want everybody to see you. But the proper channels ain't making it to where you can get where everybody can see you. So when somebody comes along and says, we want to do this for you, I'm like, okay, go ahead.
You're like, it's a gift.
It's a gift. And if you don't, and if it doesn't work, then it's the same as it ever was. And if it does work, then that's good. And then you get a feeling like, okay, something's coming in the horizon. There's like a light that you're starting to see at the end of the tunnel is what you're starting to see when you see a movie like this come out.
And if you're really lucky, maybe the next volume two, Les Claypool can say, you know, Fishbone is the band.
Yeah, right.
You know, our booking agent comes to us, it comes to me, and he's like, you know what, you can do, if you do a set of just the oldies and you take out most of the profanity and da-da-da-da-da-da, I could book you in fairgrounds all over the place. And you'll make
four
times as much money as you make now.
With thousands of people sitting there going.
A booking agent.
Right. With thousands of people at that fairground sitting there going, who's that band again?
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
You know?
Yeah. Right?
So, yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm
what
like,
are they called? Mothbone?
Mothbone. Huh? Oh, God.
Yeah.
Wait, I think I heard that song. What's that song?
Yeah,
but, oh God!
You know,
right? Motivationally, you know what? That could lead you to a great drug habit when you think about
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
dude,
that could lead you to a whole different level.
You're plugging
of,
yourself. You're holding yourself back pretty much from being on that.
Yeah.
I was done writing songs. Maybe. Yeah. Okay. I ain't got another song to write. Okay. Let's just go ahead and do these oldies. But you know what? I got a future.
Well, yeah. And you know,
in the future with now some sanity even, mixed
I got
in.
I got a future, and it's not based. You know, it is built upon my past, but it's not based on my past.
But you know, if you're really lucky, someday you can be the Red Hot Chili.
And you know what, man? Trip off of this. We've tried selling out. Okay,
yeah.
We've tried selling out, at least from my perspective.
And it doesn't work.
You tried selling out.
Yeah, I actually gave in a little and said, yeah, I'll change my lyrics and I'll change some musical arrangements and work with different artists and stuff. And it still didn't change anything for the sake of the band getting to that next step up, you know, and like into the more mainstream where more people can see us, you know. And of course, you got the producer in the ear and the management in the ear telling you, well, if you only do this, then this is going to happen and that's going to happen. And guess what?
It doesn't work.
It don't work.
It doesn't work.
It don't work, man. I just should have kept the curse words in, and I just should have kept my arrangements like it was and kept singing what I'm singing, because it just don't work. And they ran the Hollywood on us, and it's just still the same. Yeah,
I'm like, don't if you feel this conflicted, let's just write another song.
Yeah, you know me, man, trying to please everybody. You can't please everybody.
And here we have the and here we have the group dynamic.
You can't
right
please
there.
Everybody. I've learned that when you can't please everybody, sometimes you just got to say fuck you. I won't do what they tell me. I would like to have the financial gain.
Sure.
I'd like to have the low riders, the mansion and the yacht, helicopters and all that. I'd like to have that,
sure.
Right? But I'm not trying to. lessen my edge or my integrity.
And by the way, nobody here is putting down any of these bands. Yeah,
exactly. No, we ain't putting them down, man. Because they're good people. They've been good people ever since we've known.
And honestly, like, the more that I'm around, that kind of energy, the people who have done those things, is actually, most of them actually, they seem to have done what they honestly felt like doing.
That's it. That just, you know, has gotten them right.
I actually remember when the Red Hot Chili Peppers, they were going, like, when they were making Mother's Milk, all they were saying is, we want to make a more soulful record.
Right.
They didn't say, like, we want to make pop hits. They said, they were digging in, trying to find what was in their soul. That's all they ever said.
Right.
And that's how it came out.
Right.
And that was what people wanted en masse. So, you know what I mean? It wasn't a matter of them, you know, and then all of a sudden something was working and they kept making it work.
En masse or unmasked?
En
masse. Okay, right.
En masse.
Right.
But you know what I mean? So I'm thinking like those people.
And Mace.
And I've actually, as I grew older, like some of the people that I grew up like disliking, like there was a point where I really hated Lionel Richie, right? And at a certain point, I was like, you know what? If Lionel Richie was sitting around trying to be Chuck D, it wouldn't work. Lionel Richie has to do what he does.
Right.
And then I stopped hating him, you know? I was like, I looked around. I'm like, you know what? Madonna is an excellent businesswoman, and she actually maneuvered and did exactly what she wanted to do. Like, I hated Madonna and as a teenager, like when I was just coming out of my teens. I was like, dude, what is this garbage?
You got to respect her from a different
But then
aspect,
I grew
man.
Up, and I looked at her, and I was like, you know what? If a man did what she did, you know what I mean? He would be so super celebrated. I don't have to hate this woman. You know, she did what felt natural to her.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't Angela Davis. She's Madonna.
Yeah. Exactly. So you got to respect that part as opposed to, like,
you know,
whether or not you like the music or not.
Well, but that's a whole different thing.
But somebody that makes a change in their music and they really hate what they did, well, then that's selling out.
Well,
if you sell a million records and you really like, I can't stand this song.
But that's gotta be a
hell on earth feeling to have to do that song every night.
That's purgatory right there.
I think Mick Jagger really meant it when they did Miss You. He was enjoying
But what
do you think about The Clash when they started to go that direction?
Well, Mick Jones really enjoyed, like, the hip-hop.
So I've invented this thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs as the bread. And then I want you each to pick five or six songs of any sort that you want to play in between.